Welcome in to Defending the Natty, a college fantasy football dynasty podcast hosted by myself, Nate Marquise, and of course, Jared Palmgren. We have a fantastic show for you guys here on this mid-November episode. There is no doubt in my mind that we're going to have a ton of fun tonight. Jared, what's up, brother?
Not much, man. Again, we're playoff time in pretty much a ton of my leagues. I got a couple of home leagues that only have like 14 playoffs, so they got one last week before those get thrown down. But all my dynasty leagues, man, I tanked pretty hard in your 2014 dynasty league this year.
Yes, you did. You tanked spectacularly.
And then immediately got knocked out of your little loser playoff. so I'm not getting the number one pick either. I sucked a little too hard there. But, you know, some of my other ones, again, the Natty Chasers Dynasty League, I was number one in that league. I got the bye this week, so that's nice to be shown out on. And then in the Expert Blue Bloods League, I snuck into the playoffs. Like, I had some pretty bad luck throughout the year, but all I needed was Andrew Katz and Mike Bainbridge to lose in the last week, and lose they did, and I was able to outscore them to sneak into that last playoff spot. So it was fortune favored me there. Now I'm supposed to try to beat Mitch Hart this week, but currently Caden Hauser can't get his act together for East Carolina right now, so that's probably going to hurt me quite a bit. But otherwise, I'm having a great time, man.
One of my favorite pastimes this fall has been to hate watch and just sit there and just hate everything going on in the games, and hoping that the guy that I'm up against, his team just falls apart, because I feel like I've been doing a serious amount of that this fall.
See, that's so stressful to me, because every time I do that, that's when, like, Ollie, last year I was watching Ollie Gordon against BYU, and that's when they went to overtime, and that's when Ollie Gordon scored those two extra touchdowns. And I was just like, it just makes it all the more brutal when you just sit there and watch it the whole time. It's so agonizing.
It does make it. It does make it way more painful. It definitely does.
Anyway, so who's this dude sitting between us, Nate? I don't know. I don't know who this guy is. He kind of snuck in here.
That's right. We, as most of you have heard, we have a guest with us tonight. We promised the listeners an awesome show. You know, this is the main attraction, the star for the night here. Without further ado, we've mentioned him on some of the articles at Campus Canton. I know I listened to you guys with the waiver wire episode this past week, and you guys certainly discussed it there at the end. We have special guests with us tonight. Of course, this is Volume Pigs. Justin Leo joins us. So Justin, man, welcome into Defending the Natty. What's up, dude?
Hey, well, thanks guys for having me. Glad to be here. We've been talking about it for a while. For those of you listening at home, this is actually the first time Nate and I have been on the same call. I've been talking a lot of crap, basically every opportunity I've had on Jared's show. So it's a long time coming. It's a lot of bad blood here. This is a vicious rivalry in across multiple leagues, really. And so, it's going to get hairy tonight, I think. So.
Yeah, you're joining this. What am I, the third rate analyst here? That's
well, that's putting it kindly. I mean, I try to, you know, when the lights are on, I try to be a little bit more kind. But
my wife and I had an argument about how we're going to remodel the bathroom downstairs, and third rate analyst was putting it very kindly with some of the words that she had for me as we were having a disagreement on how that would go. So,
well, I might have to give her a call, exchange some notes, maybe.
Yeah, man, it is awesome. It's awesome to have you on. You're definitely the one of my arch nemesis for sure in the 24 team dynasty league that I run. For the listeners out there, it's 24 teamer. Last year was the first year of it, and Justin and I, of course, went head to head in the championship game, which I just narrowly edged him out. And I'll be damned, he's made the playoffs yet again, and here we are, both of us potentially going to battle it out again. So should be really interesting.
Yeah, well, I'm flattered that you call me your arch nemesis in that league, because I don't know that I've beaten you. I've probably beaten you once out of the four times we played. I think this more has to do with me sniping you on the waiver wire, but look, I'll take that, and that loss in the championship still stings. I don't remember who I think it was Levi Williams. Utah State quarterback,
Oh
right? He went to
yeah,
like double
yes.
overtime. And not only did he didn't score passing touchdowns, he was scoring touchdowns in each segment, and it was rushing touchdowns. And he just kept, it was like the literally the best path, like the best thing that could have happened for Nate's team. And I just couldn't believe it. You talk about hate watching. I was watching that game, and I just saw the chances of my team winning melting down with each overtime period. It was hard to watch.
Do you know what's crazy? In that league, Levi Williams went on a journey because Nate had him, traded
Yes.
him to me. And then
So I have
throughout
you
the
to
se
blame.
and then I dropped him like late in the season because I was just like, oh, I need room on this roster and everything. Nate picks him up the last week.
Well, as usual, I have you to blame, Jared. I mean, once again, this is, you know, this.
It was QB like musical chairs there at Utah State last year. But
Yeah, he was QB3.
that was amazing. Picked him up day of the championship. He goes bananas and then basically retires from football and enters
Yeah.
the Marines or Air Force or something like that. It was crazy. I was like, yeah,
Yeah, if you're
man,
gonna
just
go out on top,
right off in the sunset. Yeah, that was
yeah.
awesome.
Nate need to buy a Levi Williams jersey whenever you get the chance.
Dude, I
Yeah,
would
you
absolutely
really
do
should have.
that. I
Yeah.
would. I on my Christmas list is a John Mattier shirt. So
Nice.
if Levi Williams ever comes out with his own merch, I'd be all over it.
Dude, honestly,
Well,
I need to buy a Jon Batiere jersey as well. I was all on him during the offseason, man. That's one of my proudest moments as a CFF analyst, was sticking with him through thick and thin.
You guys send me your emails. I'll send you a VP t-shirt. That's almost as good, so.
Hey, I'd rock that too.
All right, Nate,
Well, tonight,
what are we doing besides shooting the crap here?
let's get it out there, man. So tonight we promised the listeners an awesome show. In this episode, we plan to get a little sizzling here. We're gonna turn up the heat. Things are gonna get hotter than a frog's ass on a Mississippi sidewalk in July. We are dropping some hot takes tonight because this is our hot take episode. Did you guys come prepared with some fire to breathe tonight?
Yeah,
I have.
I think so. But I'm similar to Jared. I saw his message in the chat there. I don't know if I'm that great at hot takes. We'll see.
Hot takes are just not my game, man. Like, so much of what I do for like the CFF community is like just trying to amalgamate like what the general consensus is on things. And so I guess because of that, I have like grown to be very reserved in a lot of my takes because like that's just what I spend so much time with. And so like for me to kind of break outside of that, and that is a flaw of my own sometimes, is like trying to kind of break away from certain things there. But I passed these by Chris K. He was more
It's got the Chris K stamp of approval.
he's approved all of these. He said some were kind of mild, some were a little bit hotter, so we'll see where we kind of go with this.
I love and I hate the fact that Chris K has been mentioned and already has some hand in this episode.
He did not come up with any of these. I just threw them
I
out to
know,
him, and
I
he.
know. That's
So.
too good. Okay, so that's the plan. That's the plan for tonight. We're gonna go hot take. I have two questions for you guys before we jump into that. One question you see on the show sheet, this skeleton sheet of a show sheet here, but the other one I did not send to you. That's because I just thought of it a minute ago. I was so tonight I made chili for dinner, and I got to thinking, I was like, I'm about to hop on a call with a couple of other guys from totally different parts of North America here. And I just am curious what your guys' idea of a good chili consists of. And is it even that popular of a thing where you guys are at? Like it is in the Midwest here.
I mean, yeah, like it's absolutely popular down here in the South. I don't know what else
What
to tell you.
what's a Georgia chili consist of?
I don't know if this really represents like a Georgia chili, but you know, you guys, now I'm blanking what the hell it is in chili. It's just always, I've never actually made chili before.
You
It's
just eat
always just,
it,
it just kind of
yeah.
shows up.
Here in the Midwest, it's so like more of like an Oklahoma, Texas thing. Like it's very meaty.
Yes.
My wife and I eat ours on top of Fritos with cheese. It's like a Frito chili pie, and that weirds
Oh,
people out around here in Kansas City. They've never heard of such a thing.
wait,
I've
what? That's a
never
weird
heard of
thing over
that.
there,
Yeah.
dude. Do you know how much childhood memories I have, like going to a Chattanooga Lookouts baseball game, and they just literally pop open the bag of Fritos, and then they put the chili in the bag of Fritos.
Yeah.
And it's incredible. It's awesome.
In Nebraska, so we have a lot of people at my work that went to school and grew up in Nebraska. Their thing is to eat cinnamon rolls with chili. Is that not the weirdest thing ever?
Yeah, this is all weird to me. I haven't heard of anybody, the Fritos thing, the cinnamon thing.
Yeah, what's Canadian chili like?
Well, it's just, it seems like it's pretty basic in comparison. I think it's just the meat, the beans. To be honest, I've never made it either. Like, I just sort of eat it. I can ask my wife, maybe.
But, do you put tomatoes in your chili, Justin?
Absolutely. Yeah, okay, I think that's cool.
I would agree.
Yeah. No, I think the basics are always the same. It's just these add-on components that seem to be different region to region.
So Let me ask Nate, your friends with the cinnamon rolls, is it like the cinnamon roll on the side, or they've dumped the chili like on the cinnamon roll?
Dude, I think they eat it like on the side, but they'd never make chili without cinnamon rolls. Like they're like peanut butter and jelly in certain parts of Nebraska. And I'm just like, what the hell are we, what is happening? How are you guys having dessert and dinner like at the same time? It just weirds me out.
Yeah, it is strange. It explains why their football program has been the way it has been the last 10 years or so. A lot of strange decisions happening over there.
You know, I could actually stomach the idea of just having a cinnamon roll there next to me while I eat chili, because I'm always down for cinnamon rolls. What I don't get is, like, I think it's Cincinnati or like some parts of Ohio where they put the chili on top of like spaghetti. And I'm just
it's like
what?
Soupy chili. It's like, it's very, it's soupy. Like, yeah, and it goes on pasta. I don't know.
So it's like a substitute for like a bolognese sauce. Kind of, I don't know. But yeah.
Do we all agree chili on hot dogs still good to go, right? Because I know some people get weirded out by that. Okay, cool. Yeah, just want to make sure.
Yeah.
Cool.
I'm all in for that, man. I'm all in. Let's do it. Okay. So food question out of the way. Let's get into actual fantasy football question here.
For those of you still with us.
Yeah. That's our Cooking with Colin section of this podcast here, Cooking with Nate. So moving over here to actual dynasty and fantasy football, I was curious from you guys, just now that I know you guys have been playing dynasty for at least a couple, 2-3 years or so now. What do you guys feel like you've learned from Dynasty in 2024? Has anything that's happened this year changed your mind or been some kind of a lesson that you're like, man, I've got to change some element of this, or I'm going to look more for this when it comes to how I handle my Dynasty rosters and drafts as we look to 2025?
I will say my thing I probably have learned the most this year was me kind of running a little bit of a test in terms of when to trade. Right, because in your league, Nate, I kind of ran with a strategy of, let me try to sell off some of my biggest players right before the supplemental draft, right? Try to build up some players for this year. I know I'm going to tank. Might as well try to go ahead and grab some guys now, kind of get a year started early on my rebuild. On some level, that has worked out for me. But I didn't sell everybody at the trade deadline. And quite frankly, looking back at the trades, like, let me see if I can pull up the transactions from that league. I know for one, Nate, you completely swindled me on a Ricky White for Zach Evans. That was a terrible, terrible call on my part.
I think you and I would both admit the North Texas running back room played out way differently than any of us anticipated.
No, it was an absolute train wreck everywhere. But again, like, just for the most part, like, I wasn't getting the value that I really wanted. I look back on this again, getting Josh Hoover for Jackson Dart, as well as me moving up to the second round, was a pretty solid trade. But
that was nice.
But then even
you
later,
win some, you lose some, man.
Yeah, you win some, you lose some. But then even later, The trade I was able to get, we talked about it on the last show, right, Nate, where I was able to get, where the heck is it? Here it is, where I sold off Jalen Royals for a third round pick and Yacine Willis. Like, I just felt like I was getting better value when I was getting closer to the trade deadline. People were kind of willing to give up just a little bit more for guys that were going to help them in the playoffs, right? And I saw this in the BTR Dynasty League as well, where I had a ton of seniors. I just had terrible luck throughout the year. Very old team, but I had a ton of guys to sell. I was getting much better value closer to then than I was around, or just more action in general than I was getting around the supplemental draft. I think people are very I kind of found that people are very much hesitant to kind of give up stuff closer to the draft itself rather than the trade deadline.
Yeah, I think that's fair. And you know a little bit more what those assets are the closer you've seen enough of Yasiin Willis to know that, okay, this guy's got a legit chance to be a nice, really nice asset for me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I would just add, Jared, I wouldn't feel too bad about getting swindled by Nate. That seems to happen quite a bit in this league. So,
this league in particular, I don't know why. And I say this as somebody who got swindled by Nate. I don't know what it is about Nate in this league. He does seem to get tons.
To be fair, I'm kind of in the same boat. I mean, that Curtis Rourke trade, obviously it worked out in the end, but from an objective standpoint, first rounder for Curtis Rourke, it wasn't really even determined that he was going to be the starter at the time. I don't know why I started.
Are you complaining about owning Curtis Rourke right now?
Well, it's a little bit more nuanced than that.
In a 2014. No, I get it. The dynasty world in which we play in here, it is the Wild West, and there are some trades even that I wasn't even a part of. Where I'm just like, holy crap, I can't believe that just happened. But
this is a whole different topic for the show, but the valuation of assets in the dynasty format, I think we're all still trying to figure it out because
agreed.
Yeah. Most 100%. Of the trades, nobody sort of agrees on like what is even fair value. I've been involved in some lopsided trades as well. There's been a few that I think are lopsided, but like nobody really knows how to value a lot of these players. Right. So it is what it is. So I guess it's my turn then.
Yeah. What about you?
Yeah. Well, so I'd never played in the Dynasty League before doing this. Right. And another confession, I'd never actually played in the C2C League either. So a long format league where you're keeping players was sort of new to me. And you all, well, maybe some of you listening at home, you guys know me. I'm the running back guy in CFF. And generally, that's who I sort of want to prioritize. And quarterback and wide receiver are kind of the two positions where I sort of have confidence. I'll just figure it out later on. Certainly in Nate's league, I think at wide receiver that has held true. It just seems to be a position where routinely is just finding value randomly quite often. Quarterback, though, in this league, I definitely did not properly account for or allot enough value, certainly when we started the league. And I've been sort of in a tough quarterback position multiple years in a row now. I mean, I've executed a few trades to sort of put a Band-Aid on that. But overall, I would say sort of, I did not really sort of think about or account for sort of just the value of quarterback in this league. And maybe that has more to do with just 24 teams rather than dynasty, but certainly that seems to be, such a position of priority where even if you just get a starter, right, that is a sort of a value.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The other lesson, but it kind of takes away from Nate's lesson. So I don't know if I want to get into it too much.
No,
but
go for it.
Yeah. So. And I've actually been pretty good in Nate's league, but for some reason I've forgotten this lesson in other leagues, is letting other people blow their budget for sort of the hot asset each week has actually served me quite well. I went back and looked at my rosters over the past couple of years. Guys like Kyle Manungai, Gage Larvidane, even this year, Ahmad Hardy, he's a good one, Fluff Bothwell. You kind of don't really think about these guys because they're not the hot asset that week. And you put in a bunch of claims, you lose out on the guys who are the top ones, and then yours processes and you have a guy like Fluff Bothwell. You don't really think too much about it. Then a few weeks goes along and then you realize like, oh, well, this guy's actually really, really good. And a lot of, often actually, especially this year, I would say, not just in Nate's league, but in some of the other CFF leagues, some of those top priorities each week where people were blowing their budget sort of fizzled out as well. And so I say this as a lesson. Oh, so go ahead, Jared.
I was going to say, sometimes you get a Nick Nash, sometimes you get a Damon Ward.
but you never really remember that ahead of time. Like, especially early on when you see somebody pop off, you're thinking this is the next, like I have to blow the budget here because this is the guy who's going to take me to the ship. Right. And then, like Savion Williams. That's the guy. I was getting him confused for the other one. Quentin Johnston, I think his name was. Yeah, Savion, right? So in my home league, which Nate is part of, I actually drafted Savion, dropped him right before game one. Game one, he has a massive game. So he's like priority number one on the waiver that week. Someone in our league blew like, I don't know, half their budget to get him. Obviously, like he's been a good player. But there's been so many other good receivers like, Taj Felton, the Maryland receiver. He was just taken for free after waivers cleared that week. You look at other players like Jeremiah Smith, Ryan Williams. Again, this is a regular redraft league. Froton just picked those guys up for free. So, this year, not to take the shine away from Nate's, because I know he's going to touch on this as well. But I think it's sort of a lesson, or I'm reminding myself at least, that oftentimes those guys who are at the top of the priority each week on waivers, sometimes it is just better to let others, if they want to blow, like if they want to spend a huge fab on them, because there is so much value, like secondary down the line, like in the lower priorities of the waivers, where maybe it doesn't feel that way that week, but like a few weeks will go on and like Ahmad Hardy all of a sudden, 17 points per game, true freshman, right? I think he was like a 25 point fab acquisition in Nate's league. Doesn't get much better than that. Not to toot my own horn, but that 25 pointage fab has been great to me. Kyle Manungai, he's
No
another
doubt.
one in that range. You can get amazing bell cow running backs, 25 fab in Nate's league, where people have budgets of 500 up to 900. So sorry, I've been talking a lot. I'll give a chance for you guys to chime in.
Yeah, I mean, I echo those sentiments. To just, I think I've already told you this, but the funny part about you getting Ahmad Hardy in that league is that he was, so this is a great example of don't blow your budget, because that was after week one. And I put in a huge waiver claim for Alonzo Barnett, Anthony Tyus, who both went off. Alonzo Barnett had gone off a little bit, but Anthony Tyus went bananas, obviously, against Syracuse. And then I was so pissed off of myself for, after trading Caleb Johnson, trading for Caleb Johnson from Jared, I dropped him after that stupid Kirk Ferentz, the whatever he put out, the depth chart that he put out there before week one. And there's Caleb Johnson sitting there as RB3. And I'm like, you gotta be kidding me. So I drop him, pick up God knows who. And then, of course, Caleb Johnson has a big, week one in the second half, didn't even play in the first half. But what's funny is, had I not put in that $75 claim for Caleb Johnson, I had like a $50 claim in for Ahmad Hardy. So the fact that I got Caleb Johnson is the reason why Ahmad Hardy's on your roster and not
Well,
mine. But
to be fair,
yeah, I mean, that's because you didn't, that's because I had already blown a whole bunch of money elsewhere and stuff like that. But I think your point's great, that, kind of let some other people blow their shot, and then you go ahead and get some really, really nice players left over.
I think there is some nuance to it, and sorry if I cut you off, Jared, but you
No.
have to be careful about it and almost sort of be like a precision sniper when it comes to those few moments where you're willing to unload the budget, right? So sometimes the stars align and there's enough sort of structural reasons there, like the staff, there's a little bit more of a storyline there in terms of like, is this actually going to be sustainable for the rest of the season? Versus, say, taking a shot on someone that, like, okay, you feel good about, they had a massive game week one, week two, whatever, but there isn't like really as much sort of behind it. I know that's sort of that's sort of fuzzy as a point, but in CFF, there are some systems, right? Like when a player emerges in that system that you've been waiting on, let's say the Texas running back or the Western Kentucky slot receiver, for example, right? If this was a question all offseason and you see a player emerge, maybe there's a little bit more sort of reason to go all in, right? Like I have blown the budget a couple of times in Nate's league. Coleman Owen, he's one of them, the Ohio Bobcat wide receiver. I think he was like a 160 claim. I just would not be beat that week. But that's because there's been a history there with that staff, right? They've had receivers come through there, been productive. I was bullish on the Mac this year just as a for a bounce back this season. So there are some specific examples there. Alonzo Barnett's a great one as well, right? Especially in this format where you have multiple seasons with them. I don't think you regret sort of spending up for that player, right? And funny about Caleb Johnson, I do remember you offering me Caleb Johnson in a trade actually in the offseason. That has stung me, ever since. And to this point as well, right? When that depth chart was released, I picked up Kamari Moulton when the waivers cleared, whatever, the next time after that the news had released. That was like a $60 transaction for Kamari Moulton, right? So I don't know. It's a nuanced thing. It's a difficult thing to know like how much to pay up. But in general, I think my rule, especially, I don't know, in Dynasty and in my home league, I think I'm just going to go conservative, or err on the side of conservative most of the time now.
Funny thing about Caleb Johnson, one of my closest buddies is an Iowa guy, and he feeds me a lot of what the insiders are saying over at Iowa. And all offseason, I kept asking him, because I loved Caleb Johnson as a bounce back guy this year. And all offseason, I kept asking him, "Hey man, what's the story with the running backs? Is it going to be Caleb Johnson?" And he kept telling me, "No, it's not going to be Caleb Johnson. It's going to be committee at best. Caleb Johnson's not going to be the guy." So I kind of like pumped the brakes on him, and then I just wish at the end I was like, "Man, I should have trusted in myself, not my Iowa buddy."
Well,
But
what sort of intel is this guy getting? I mean, I don't know, like Tim Lester even compared Kamari Moulton to like Aaron Jones because like he came from Green Bay, and when
but
I heard
like,
that,
wow. He didn't play in the first half, though.
That's what
It's
I'm saying.
wild.
Like clearly, the staff was seeing the same thing of whatever this guy was seeing
And
in
you watch the
practice.
games and you're like, "My God,
Well,
what are we
but
doing?"
committee at best is different from like, okay, Kamari Moulton starts the game with 19 carries,
Right. Oh,
RB1,
no,
you know,
agreed.
like,
Yeah. Agreed, agreed, agreed.
So, you know,
No
Kamari
doubt.
Moulton had his shot, he just sucks, and then Caleb Johnson took it, the torch in the second half, and it's just been good night, you know, like.
Yeah.
Hey, at least the staff actually recognized Caleb Johnson's greatness rather than trying to force Moulton every single week.
No
Anyway, enough
doubt.
about Iowa running backs. To your guys' point on this waiver acquisition budget, fab, whatever. I couldn't think of the word there. You guys know what I'm talking about. I've been on both sides of this season, actually. So in the Canes Classic, it is a redraft league, but we do use FOB in that league. And in leagues where, you know, it's not eBay style, I'm much more conservative in like how much I'm dropping. And so I don't win as many waivers in those leagues, but I'm currently number one in that league. And as we go into the playoffs, I currently have easily the biggest budget. Or at least in the last week or two heading into the playoffs, I had easily the biggest budget and so, left. So I was able to pick up on some of the heavier
What's that
guys.
like, dude? I
Oh,
have
it was.
never entered the playoffs in any team I've ever owned with any budget.
Oh, it's been,
Ne
it's
never in my life.
let me tell you, it's
I'm
fantastic. Because
like
again, I could put insane
a
prices on
four-year-old
people.
at the candy store every time waivers come around in those first few weeks.
But on the opposite side, right? And this is another lesson for everybody. Double check your league rules and make sure you know whether or not your league is using regular bidding versus eBay style bidding. Because in a league where I thought it was eBay style bidding, which is where I am willing to go very high on my bids, boy, did I blow that budget real quick when I realized it was not eBay style bidding. I got my guys the first 2 weeks, let me tell you that.
I bet you did.
But yeah, I didn't have any budget from like week three on. And
Nice.
the thing about this league is that every week there is a 24-hour period where you can actually grab guys if you don't have any budget. Because it's like because waivers run Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. And then there's like that after that Friday to when games start is when you can pick up free agents.
Wild.
So, and there are multiple weeks where I just straight up forgot on Friday to look and see who's available. And so I would have multiple weeks where I just didn't add anybody. So that's my lesson
Yeah,
learned
well,
this
and to
year.
that point, this is sort of a corollary or somewhat related to what we were just discussing. So in Nate's league specifically, I had quite a bit of budget left like a month ago. And I was kind of there was it was getting kind of dry on the waivers for like, I don't know, a couple of weeks leading up to that. So I just kind of like looked at my budget and felt like, well, it's getting worse and worse. Why don't I just unload the budget here next week and get guys that, you know, I know I want, but like, you know, it's not getting any better. I probably don't need this budget. That I think is a huge mistake because, you know, there's sort of this thinking, at least for me, that like the best, it gets worse over the season in terms of what's available on the wire. But that's not necessarily the case, actually. Like, especially in Nate's league, I've found it sort of it definitely got dry there in October. Mid-October, but in November here, as the playoff period has started, like there have been some guys who have emerged. The kid from NIU, for example, there's a bunch, right? Where like you would want to have that budget to just snipe that one player. It could be the difference. So.
Well, Telly Johnson's a good example of what some coaches do, where a lot of people kind of think like, oh, if you're going to redshirt a guy, you play him early on in the season, right? And you kind of blow his games there, and then you sit him the rest of the year versus NIU, man, they didn't play Johnson hardly at all this year. And then now here in these last couple of games, they're ready to kind of cut him loose a little bit, especially with Ontario Brown down with injury. Like I think they're happy that they saved him until this point. So he could be a huge force in the next couple of weeks as a staff doesn't really care about him saving eligibility anymore.
Dude, I've thought about that with how playoffs have expanded so much. You could redshirt and play eight games this year. You know that? And like that, it's crazy to think that there's players out there that we aren't even talking about right now that could play the next six games because their team makes a deep run in the playoffs, you know, and they could put up incredible stats and we haven't even seen them really touch the field yet. Probably won't happen, but you never know.
It's a fun
Never know.
thought for sure.
All right, we've kind of probably hammered on the budget scenario here quite a bit. Let's get into let's get spicy here. Let's do some hot takes. So what we'll do is we've each got a handful of hot takes that we've brought to the table here tonight. None of us know what the other one's hot takes are. We've kept them totally secret up to this point. Let's just take turns one at a time. Each person will give one, and then we'll move on to the next person here. Justin, you're our special guest for the night, so we'll give you the honors. What kind of dynasty related hot take you got for us here?
Well, my first one contains one of my favorite players, and I'm happy that I have him in Nate's Dynasty League, and that is one LJ Martin, BYU running back. My take is in 2025, he eclipses 1,500 total yards. I thought about going rushing exclusively. I don't know how hot this take is. I'm starting things off maybe tepid. I don't know, but he's. When he plays, when he's healthy, he's quite productive, right? So this year, that's certainly been the case. Started the season, there was sort of some mystery actually surrounding him. We weren't really sure when his first game was going to be the start this season. Wasn't sure if he's gone IR, if he was starting. So a little bit of controversy there. He starts the season, he goes down, I believe, game two in the first quarter, and then sort of misses a few weeks. And then immediately when he comes back, he starts scoring a couple scores per game. 20 points in fantasy leagues per game. This past weekend, it peeled back a little bit. I think they played Utah, which is a tougher matchup. But that's a system where historically, like that OC and that head coach, like they've had a lot of productive running backs come through there. The OC, I think, has oscillated back and forth between BYU and Utah. So some of those good Utah backs that people are thinking of from the 2010s, he was the OC. And then LJ Martin, he's such an above average player for them in terms of like the caliber of player that they usually get. Such a productive player in high school, had the requisite size immediately when he arrived there. He's like 6'2", 200 pounds. I think he's bulked up a little bit. This season is sort of lost because he was injured a little bit, although he's been productive. But I would really like to see what a full year of a healthy LJ Martin could do in the Big 12, right? I love that conference for CFF. And I was actually thinking this year would be his big year because I thought like they had nobody at quarterback, had nothing else going on. That's what the beat writers made it seem like. Every time I checked in there, it was doomsday on their boards. They thought this was going to be a terrible season. Funny how that worked out. I thought this was
Here
going to
we
be a
are,
bad
10-10
team
and
with
0.
The anti-FSU.
literally. Well, yeah, literally,
Right.
yeah, exact opposite. Yeah. So it's funny how things work out, and LJ is having a productive season, but I do wonder with a full offseason start, healthy start. BYU, obviously, they're a good team. So maybe they ride that momentum into 2025.
I think it's pretty spicy. I mean, we're talking about a guy that barely has 900 career rushing yards through two seasons or a little over a season and a half, and you're calling for 1500. So that's pretty good. I mean, he's going to have to average, close to 125 total yards a game, and this is a guy that's averaging, barely 75 total yards this year. So, yeah, what do you think, Jared? That's pretty spicy, right?
Well, again, I said total yards, right? So
Yeah,
not just
total yards.
rushing.
Yeah, no, that's good. Yeah.
Total yards, I think he can get there. The problem is, again, like he's got five catches for 55 yards on the season, which, he's not, it's not, not, he's not a complete zero in the catching department, but he's going to need to kind of up those numbers for sure because he's played like, what, six games this year, seven games this year. So you're averaging less than a catch per game. He's going to need to be more involved in that front because I could see a 1,200-yard season pretty easily out of Martin just on the ground, right? Again, he's got everything you need here in terms of a potential workhorse. When he is, like you said, when he's 100% healthy,
But
you're
that's
looking.
part of the deal is we haven't seen him. I mean, this
Well,
is
no,
a guy,
I agree. Like
16
that,
games
yeah,
through
that's
2 years,
fair.
right?
No, I absolutely agree that health is
That's
absolutely a
what
big
makes it
concern
spicy.
here. No, I agree. It's
Yeah,
pretty
exactly.
spicy. But also, I wouldn't be surprised, right, if people are looking at LJ Martin, they see like his potential workhorse here, and he's being drafted in like round 3, 4, 5 next year in drafts, right? And so to me, that kind of puts it not quite, super hot it, like, you know, I'm not, my mouth's not on fire over here from this take, but I agree with you that a lot needs to go right in order for that to happen. You can't wait for mine? Oh, yeah, just absolutely tear me apart, Nate.
All right, let's hear it. What's your first spicy take here?
I'll go with the one I think is the least spicy.
Oh, okay.
So we'll start you guys
just a little off. Just a little appetizer.
We're like on an episode of Hot Ones right now. I gotta start you guys off easy here. Isaac Brown is the RB1 in CFF Dynasty right now.
You son of a! Did you secretly read my show sheet?
Did you have the exact same take right now?
I had the exact same one of my first one.
As soon as I wrote this down, I'm like, this is not going to be hot at all to Nate because Nate loves Isaac Brown. But
all right, say it again for me. What was the exact take?
Isaac Brown is the RB1 in CFF Dynasty.
God damn, that's my exact number. That's my exact first one.
Not
off the board,
RB1 in this class. No,
yes,
RB1
number one dynasty running back. If I am doing, I've already done my top five dynasty rankings at each position for next year. He is number one for running back. Son of a bitch.
Let's take a look at what he's done so far this year. He's number one in freshman production, 900 yards in the season so far. Hasn't even played a full work. He's got a half workload against Austin Peay and Georgia Tech. Didn't get a full like carry workload until week 7 versus UVA, and he's almost at 1,000 yards already on the season. He's number 8 among all running backs in breakaway percentage, which, Nate, I know you love that. He's number 1 among all freshman running backs above 40 attempts in breakaway percentage. He's number 2 among freshman running backs in yards after contact per attempt, which is obviously another great stat in terms of future projection there. Right? In addition, running back, man, it clears out after this year. We've been spoiled the last couple of years, but like, just looking at the top 48 guys, like GNT, Harvey, Mario Anderson, Scadabo, or Trey Stewart, Taj Brooks, Tootin, Jaquavius Marks, Connors, Smith, Breshard Smith. The whole point is, we got a lot of guys clearing out. Those are the guys that are guaranteed to be done. That's not even guys that could possibly even go to the NFL after this year, right? There's not a lot of guys left after this year that have a ton of eligibility. Hardy obviously will be a top guy. Fluff, Bothwell will be big here. Darius Taylor is obviously still going to be up there. He's got 2 years. Mekhi Hughes got 2 years. But nobody has the potential that Isaac Brown has in the system for Jeff Brohm, which we've seen, you know, Duar Jordan very recently, and then go back to his time at West Kentucky. Just absolute monster running backs. And Isaac Brown fits every bit of what you want to see in a Jeff Brohm running back here. 32 targets on the season, so he's got the receiving ability as well. He'll get you those PPR points there as well. I see a path towards at least 2 more years of awesome production for CFF, if not 3, because he is a small back. He is not a guy that the NFL is really going to be wanting to look at too much unless he bulks up a lot over the next couple of years. So, Isaac Brown, RB1 in CFF Dynasty.
Does it make it less spicy that both of us have that exact same thing?
I think just gonna say, people outside
two
of the
people
two
already
of us
believe that here. So. Yeah, and I don't necessarily like, you know, I can easily see that. I mean, he's got some, and you mentioned it, Jared, he's got some good competition in his own class, two of which I have on my dynasty team in Nate's league, which I'm feeling pretty good about. And then also Caden Durham, right? That's another one for LSU, freshman running back. I mean, this year has just been so good with freshmen. So unique. I keep going back and forth and thinking, is that just going to be the trend going forward or is just an anomaly? But the take on Isaac Brown, I can definitely get with it. It's what's interesting about that system, like Jeff Brohm, when he was at Purdue, I don't recall there being really a reputation of like the running back. It was always the wide receivers. There was always one wide receiver a year who was really good. Sometimes the QB was okay. I don't really remember the running backs ever being known as like, you know, this is sort of where we want to target. But you mentioned his prior history, right? At Western Kentucky, I guess before Purdue, where they had some volume pigs, shameless plug here. And then Purdue takes kind of a sabbatical from that. Now he's back to it at Louisville. He just kind of seems like a play caller where he's just going to morph the offense around sort of his best players. And when he has a good running back, as is the case here with Isaac Brown, seems like that player's going to get a lot of touches. So, I mean, I could definitely see it. I mean, I don't know. Darius Taylor would probably still be RB1 for me. I guess I'd have to think about it a little bit more, but I do like the take. I think it's a good one.
Yeah, I won't add much. Obviously, with what Jared said, he covered a lot of the points that I was going to bring up. Only other thing that really kind of sticks out to me, other than the fact that he just, that was a looked to be a full on committee for the first 2 weeks, and then he just said, "No, I'm your guy," and he just took that job, just yanked it away from everybody, and said, "I'm the dude. Don't ever look back." But what I also like about this, and it's crazy that I have to look at this, look at things from this lens when it comes to Dynasty now, is Louisville, despite a lot of dysfunction this offseason, is known to have a pretty strong NIL program, right? They got money at Louisville, which tells me he's probably going to be there with Brom. Brom's not going anywhere. He's from Louisville. He's set at Louisville, and they can make sure that Isaac Brown doesn't go anywhere too, and get poached by a Miami and go, have a season like we saw from Damian Martinez this year or whatever. So I like that element to it as well.
Yeah, I think that's a great point to bring up. So
Yeah.
Nate, your turn, man. What's a
Well,
hot take you got? No, you
you
just
already
pick another
got
one.
my
Just
first
no,
yeah, you
pick
got my
another
first
one.
one there. So I will pick another one. And since his name just got brought up, I'm gonna go there, and that's Darius Taylor. And I think this might come off as a little bit spicy, given what it sounds like Justin's thoughts are on Darius Taylor in a dynasty format. But Darius Taylor should not be considered a top 15 dynasty running back heading into this offseason. Top 15. He
So,
is. Go ahead,
explain. So
though.
here's my thought on that, Nate.
And it's not anything to do with the fact that he might just have one season left. I
No,
don't think his one season is going to be very good. Well, let me rephrase it. I don't think his season's going to be as good as what people are hoping for.
well, again, a lot of this year has come from his receiving ability, which has helped him
Yeah,
out a
right?
ton. And the actual rushing production hasn't been there as well. But that's also been something that's been relatively unique among, PJ Fleck running backs for Darius Taylor, right? Is that he actually has that catching ability that can really kind of keep him involved in games no matter what. The only
Former wide
thing,
receiver in high school.
yeah.
So like the thing that really kind of comes out to me here, Nate, is again, I kind of bring up the fact that, as I kind of mentioned before, among the top 48 guys in CFF right now this year, you got one, two, three, four, five, six, seven, eight, nine guys with more than 1 year of eligibility left after this year. There just isn't a ton. Like I get what you're saying, right? If this was a normal year, I do think there would be some concern for Darius Taylor, but because it's so much clears out after this year, I think just by default, Darius Taylor has to still kind of be considered in that top 15 range. So because I
What
disagree with you here,
do you think? You think it's pretty spicy?
I would say it's spicy
I do, yeah.
because I think it's because it I think it's spicy because I think you're wrong.
Okay. Good, good.
That's the game
And
we're playing here.
your
Well, logic makes sense.
you're basing the fact that there are a lot of players are cleared out. Darius Taylor's a proven commodity. Darius Taylor is in a PJ Fleck offense. What if Darius Taylor is not in a PJ Fleck offense next year?
That is the 100% the biggest concern. And honestly,
I don't think he's going to be.
if CFB 25 is anything to go off of, like Darius Taylor is destined for Michigan because it feels like he transfers to Michigan every
Hey.
time I do a simulation in that game.
Well,
They
but
wanted
this,
him pretty bad. He was one of the,
th
he was one of their he was an early offer for Michigan.
right, and he's from like Illinois too, right? Like he's from their recruiting base, I think,
Yeah,
somewhere in
he's in
that
that
region.
area, yeah.
Yeah, well, so but this seems a little bit like if we can start speculating that far down in terms of like okay, the player's not going to be there anymore,
Hey, we're here
well,
for
then
hot
everything's on
takes.
the table, right? Like I
So
don't know.
maybe my hot take is not only is Darius Taylor not a 15 running back, it's because I don't think he's going to be playing under PJ Fleck next year. I think the fact that this is if I ever get around to finishing my Pulse of the Nation this week, I am talking about how Darius Taylor has been grinded down into absolute dust this year. PJ Fleck all offseason, hey, we're not gonna give him the Mo Ibrahim, workload. We're gonna be real cautious with him. Well, you know what? He's already had multiple 30-plus touch games this year. He's frequently over 20 touches. I get it. He's really good. But man, he's every other play, he's like limping off to the sideline.
Yeah, you don't like to see that. I feel like it's Groundhog Day with Minnesota, where every year they say the same thing. Like, we're going to
Right.
reduce the workload with such and such
Yeah.
player, and insert X name, and then every year, it's 25, 30 touches again. That's why we
Right.
love PJ. I mean,
Yeah.
it's a
No
poison
doubt.
chalice a little bit, but double-edged sword. So.
All right, what's your next one? What's your next one, Justin?
Yeah, so let me see which one I want to unearth here first. Yeah, I think I'll go with this one. And I think this one, I don't know. I'm not even going to speculate. So obviously, Ashton Jeanty is at Boise State this year, and he's going to be leaving for the NFL, barring something crazy. Naturally, I think a lot of people are thinking about who's going to take over there next year. Some different names can be speculated upon. Obviously, Jambris Dubar has been there a couple of years. I would assume he's coming back, and I would assume he's going to be vying for the starting role. Syra Gaines, I wrote about him this offseason. He looked really good earlier in the year. He got banged up. I don't think we've seen him since. And then there's another guy. I think it's Gaines or Rains. Dylan might be his first name. You guys might have to
Or
help me out here.
Dylan Riley is his name. You're thinking of
Riley,
Sire
there we go.
Gaines.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Yeah, it's a lot of names. It's getting late. Sorry. Yeah, so there's at least three names there that are interesting. My take, just to cut to the chase here, is that Boise State will not have a top 20 running back next year in CFF. So I think a lot of people, this is a common sort of cycle, is the stud leaves, everybody wants to know who's going to fill in there. And that system has been pretty good. I mean, Dirk Cutter, he basically sort of goes back and forth from somewhere else to Boise State. He's been the OC there for various different stints. But when he was there the first time, right, like Helani, he was good. There was sort of splitting work between him and Jeanty, and that was kind of limiting both. Even though Jeanty, I guess, clearly was sort of the better player, Helani still, I guess, just because of seniority, was getting carries. I do wonder for this next year if there will be a clear player that sort of breaks through like Jeanty, or if they won't just sort of have Dubar, Gaines, and Riley sort of in a split. Certainly for maybe the first portion of the year until somebody breaks through. And I can imagine that whoever people sort of land on by like July or August, who they think the Boise State running back is going to be, could end up being like a first round pick, right? In a lot of different leagues. So I do wonder if a lot of people are going to get burned there. I don't know. We've seen this sort of thing play out in CFF before, where Texas would be an example of this, right? Several good years in a row, guy leaves, everybody speculates, and then it doesn't quite work out the way you thought it would, right? So I don't know. What do you guys think of this?
I got a couple thoughts here. One, I think that's a risk you gotta take into account every year in CFF. There's no guarantee, right? Look at Ben Arbuckle's system this year, right? We always love the Ben Arbuckle slot. The Ben Arbuckle slot just not existed this year, right? Between Chris Hudson and Josh Meredith kind of going back and forth, neither one of them is really broken out. Kyle Williams is the obvious stud at wide receiver for them this year. He plays on the outside. It's not. We play for systems because there's a high probability of that happening, right? So like I don't blame people if after this year you go after GNT there. I will say though, like Boise State, man, they run the ball enough that there is a chance of both like of two studs being able to coexist at the same time. Because like go back and look at that first year with GNT and Helani there, right? Like there were games where both of them were scoring well above 20 points. I mean, shoot, earlier this year, GNT had his monster 60-point game against Georgia Southern. Guess what? Syra Gaines was right behind him there with like 30 points. They can run the ball effectively enough. They are very good at what they do. As long as they're staying there in the Mountain West, I think there's a chance that both Breezy Dubar and Syra Gaines are both great. I will say you can probably acquire Breezy Dubar decently cheaply once, trades open back up, versus like Gaines is going to be hard to get off of people. So I get what you're saying, Justin, but I think that there's going to be value in that backfield regardless.
Yeah, I like the call. I think that's pretty spicy because there's only, five or six programs out there that I would maybe put ahead of Boise as far as that I can just lock in. This guy's going to be a that they're going to have somebody that's a top 20 guy. So for Boise not to have a top 20 guy, that'd be pretty surprising for me, whether it's Dubar or Syra Gaines. I think one of them is going to go off and be a top 20 guy. So I think that's pretty spicy.
Yeah, I mean that's fair. I mean, I do wonder about I don't know how many snaps they're going to have returning on the offensive line. Obviously, they're running the ball very effectively this year. Part of that is
Yeah, very
Jeanty.
true.
I think the offensive line is also road grading people. So, I don't know. Is it too late for me to use the Nate style excuse and say I don't think Boise's in the Mountain West next year? I think they're in the Big Ten. That's why.
You never know.
The Nate excuse now is, can I just bend time and space?
Hey, just wait. They only I'm I warmed you guys up with my least spicy, least contrived, warped Nate's mind option so far. So they only get weirder from here.
I'm looking forward to Nate bringing out his inner Andrew Katz with all the conspiracy theories we're about to hear.
Just wait, they're coming. What
All
do
right,
you
I guess
got?
I'll go with my next take here. I'll go with a freshman take. Not freshman this year, freshman next year. Bryce Underwood will be the most overdrafted player in freshman drafts next year.
How do you define overdrafted?
I think that he is not a first round pick, regardless of whether he ends up at LSU or Michigan.
First round in a startup, I assume, is what you're talking about. In
Well, first round startup, but also first round in freshman. I wouldn't.
a supplemental draft, you don't think he's worth a first round pick? The
I
number
don't.
one player in the country. Did you learn nothing about Jeremiah Smith this year?
I don't think I. You know what I did learn from Nate?
If you're
Dante
saying in a
Moore.
supplemental, he shouldn't be worth a first round pick, then that's spicy as hell, man. That's really good for you. That now you took it up a notch.
No, I'm saying I'm not. Oh wait, on.
Favorite, at least in the dynasty format. Again, drafting freshman QBs, you know inherently that you're going to have to wait probably at least like a couple seasons, maybe three. With QBs, especially, it just seems like a very sort of dicey game to have to wait that long. And then even then, you don't know if the team's going to bring in a transfer. So, I mean, there's quite a bit of risk there, right? And you're going to be holding the bag for multiple seasons before you ever get a payoff, if you ever do, with a player. And I have to say, with five-star QBs especially, they seem to transfer quite a bit, right? So the landing spot of these QBs, a lot of the times, I sort of don't really take it into account too much because I assume most of them are going to be playing somewhere else.
Here's where your take gets less spicy, Jared, is if his landing spot ends up being Michigan, which
No, I agree
there are a lot
100%.
of rumors that if he lands at Michigan and people still draft him, like super early, which I guarantee you they will because it's Underwood, that would worry me some. And yeah, that wouldn't be nearly as
Yeah,
hot.
if
If
he
he goes
goes to
to
Michigan,
LSU,
sorry, so if he goes to Michigan, I'm right with you there, Nate. I would not draft him in the first round. So, like, here, I'll add some other things in here that kind of stood out to me. One, you kind of touched on a little bit already, Justin, where I think people are going to have to wait a little bit longer for Underwood than they're kind of letting on here, right? This quarterback room is pretty filled with guys right now. You got Nussmeier, obviously, who can technically come back for another year here, Fingers
and he's
crossed.
not,
I hope so.
he's not exactly having the best season, like best second
He ain't
half of the
coming back.
season.
He ain't coming back.
Well, I'm saying,
I'm
I'm
holding
just,
out.
Not if they're getting Underwood.
I'm just pointing out. They also got Ricky Collins, who the staff does seem to like. AJ Swan still technically hanging out there. I know he's kind of buried on like at third depth chart there, but like he was a starter for Vanderbilt, right? So this isn't like a nobody on the depth chart here. I'm not saying that Underwood can't pass these guys. Clearly, he's number one player in the nation in his class for a reason, right? But so is Dante Moore, right?
How dare you
So.
besmirch? How dare you besmirch my first round pick? That was a man just took a shot at me. My first round pick in the startup of our dynasty.
Well, speaking
But
of taking shots, didn't Jalen Glover enter the transfer portal a couple days ago as well?
but regardless, so like.
I've never heard of him. Who is he?
But anyway, but like even look at the Garrett Nussmeier this year. Obviously, Jaden Daniels was a beast, right? But he had his own unique ability with his legs and everything. Then no, Underwood is not a statue by any stretch of the imagination, right? But like he's not going to be Jaden Daniels with his legs.
No.
Nussmeier, on the other hand, he's a statue, but he's already QB 21 on this year in total points, QB 25 fantasy points per game. You might be sitting there thinking, Jared, like if Nussmeier without any kind of legs can be sitting there as a top 25 QB, like. You have to think that Underwood will be just fine there. Well, Nussmeier is getting boosted pretty badly by the fact that LSU's run game has been horrific this year.
Oh,
Outside of Caden Durham, like kind of
they've been
breaking off some
bad.
big runs, their running backs have scored 9 touchdowns this year, which has left a lot more opportunities for Garrett Nussmeier because that's the only way they can get that offense moving sometimes. Compare this to 2023, where LSU's run game, 34 touchdowns. In 2022, 39 touchdowns.
But in 2023, like 20 something of those were the quarterback.
A
I was
ten,
just going
ten,
to say,
ten,
how many?
ten, ten of them were Jaden Daniels. So 24
No,
touch.
Jaden Daniels had more than 10 rushing
No, look it up. It
touchdowns.
was 10
Are you
touchdowns.
serious?
Yes.
Wow.
Again, he threw for 40. So
Because he threw a
like
lot. Yeah.
he threw for a lot more than you would think. So yeah, so they had 24 touchdowns from the running backs there. Also, Nussmeier's boosted by 3 goal line touchdowns, which I'd never expected on this planet for him to have. And then the other one point I want to bring up is the fact that Jaden Daniels obviously was great with his legs and everything like that, but he's also boosted by the fact he had 2 stud NFL wide receivers to throw to in Brian Thomas and Malik Nabers. I'll ask you guys, where are the NFL wide receivers on LSU right now? Who do they have coming in that are really like guaranteed NFL guys, right? Like,
well, but to be fair, Jared. Yeah, sorry, go ahead.
It took Brian Thomas a bit to get going there, right? But like, I don't see future first rounders at LSU right now. I think there's a reason why they keep having to dip into the portal, is that they keep whiffing on some guys in recruiting. And so I think that's going to hurt any LSU quarterback moving forward. They're not going to have guys like that.
Jonte Cook.
Not a terrible call out, but even still.
You never know. Yeah, well, but also I was going to say, to be fair, like, did people really see Justin Jefferson and Ja'Marr Chase coming like a few, like, LSU seems to have a lot of these guys that kind of come out of nowhere. Like Brian Thomas, when he had his big year, I know some people were drafting him like at the end of best ball. Talk your stuff. But like, you know, was he really somebody people were that high on, right? Like, I don't know, like, players can kind of come out of nowhere, right? And that receiver with LSU, I kind of just trust that they're always going to have some studs at wide receiver. It just, like, that state, Louisiana, always produces good receivers.
I always trusted that Texas would have a stud at running back, and here we are.
Yeah, I mean, that's a shorter pattern, though, right? Sark's only been there for a few years, inherited Bijan, and then, you know, they had Jonathan Brooks, right? So the pattern didn't quite go back quite as far as LSU wide receivers. They've had stud wide receivers going back to Les Miles, right? When they wouldn't even pass to them, right? They had the best receivers in the SEC. They wouldn't even pass to them. So they've always got some good guys to catch passes over there. And then to Nate's point with the transfer portal, I suppose that is like a trump card in all of these conversations. You can always just say, well, the room is going to flip. I mean, what? Yeah, no. So I don't know. I guess it could go that way. I like the fit with Jonte Cook. I don't know if that's going to happen, but that'd be cool.
Yeah. It's a good call, man. I still feel like if he lands at LSU, he's 100% worthy of a first round supplemental pick, especially. And if he ends up at Michigan, then he's banished to the unknown, and we don't ever want to talk about him again.
You're going to the shadow realm, Jimbo.
Yeah, to the shadow realm. Okay, here's mine. One of the things I learned this year is that FCS players I can no longer scoff at and not take serious as big time potential fantasy producers. I am saying this is a I'm casting a pretty broad net here, but I am saying there will be a player, we don't know who his name is right now, that will come up from the FCS ranks and finish top 10 in his position in the year 2025.
I don't think that's too well. Top 10, I guess, kind of makes it a little spicier. I mean, there's
a player we've never heard of. Is going to finish top 10.
This is not unheard of, Nate. Like you're describing Bailey Zappi and Josh Stearns right now.
Yeah, like Desmond
Jared
Reed.
Stearns. Like,
yeah.
If you get a guy that follows his coach up like Desmond Reed this year, like I'm a little disappointed, Nate. Like I think like there's a lot of
it's not as spicy as it sounded when I typed it out. Okay,
yeah, it's not as spicy as like once I brought up Bailey Zappi and Jared Stearns, you were like,
guys that finished number one in their position just 3 years ago. Okay, yeah, no, okay,
but even this season, right? Like this spicy. Is kind of a banner year for FCS transfers, where like Cameron Skidmore, Desmond Reed, particularly even that wide receiver,
Trey Stewart,
right? Like Trey Stewart. Andrew Armstrong at wide receiver.
To be fair, a couple of those guys it took till year two in FBS to really get going.
Yeah, yeah.
But it is a little bit spicier for it to be their very first year. They're up there.
But how about? Yeah. Okay. It'll be a quarterback. That's not going to happen. Truly, there's no Bailey Zappi that's going to happen again.
They would have to go to like North Texas or something like that. Like Chandler Morris just calls it a day, and Eric Morris grabs a guy from the FCS.
Okay. Well, all sick. Right. It wasn't as spicy as it felt like in my head. So I'll do better next time. Okay.
But let me check real quick though, because like Haj Malik Williams is coming to mind right now, and like
if he would have played the entire season, as if he had played the
let me see his fantasy points per game right now. He's top 8 in fantasy points per game. Well,
so
not,
again,
not
that
unheard
goes
of.
to my point that it's still not very spicy.
Exactly.
If it just happened literally right now, then probably not that spicy. Okay, all right, moving on.
Boo, boo, Nate.
Justin,
What? I
pretend I
mean,
never even brought that one up.
it is hard to know ahead of time with
All
this.
right, what do you got,
Okay,
Justin?
I think it's my yeah. So okay, so my next hot take is, and we mentioned both of these guys earlier. Both Ahmad Hardy and Fluff Bothwell finish top 10 in CFF running back scoring next year. And the hot part of this take is they fuel my team and Nate's Dynasty League to a championship.
Oh, well,
Can I just say
that's as spicy as it gets.
I almost made one of my hot takes today that Nate's dynasty team in the 2024 team or in the 24 team would
Yeah, three-peat.
no, it would crater in the first round of the playoffs that he would play, and then he would lose all of his players and then finish bottom five next year.
That'd be poetic justice, if anything, but
Oh man,
yeah.
that would be brutal.
But there's no way. There's no Nate is not going to lose to anybody in this So
league.
so again, the take is Bothwell and Hardy finish top 10
Both of
next year.
them.
Both of
Yeah,
them finish
both of
top
them.
10.
Not one or the other, both of them.
Hardy,
No pun
100%
intended
could see
there.
him getting there. Again, he's in a perfect system there. Really, the only worry I have is Brian Vincent being hired away after year one. And even then, like, it's a non-zero chance that Hardy just follows him and becomes the RB1 wherever he lands,
Yeah,
right?
or just transfers this season to somewhere else, right?
Exactly. That's kind of the main worry there. I mean, Bothwell is going to try probably get a bag as well, considering how well he's looked. This also it con is contingent on Kentrell Bullock not using his final year of eligibility, right?
Yeah, I'm
Or
kind of assuming
him
that.
just completely fading to dust, and Bullock just and Bothwell just completely taking over. So I'd say this is like a decently spicy one. Like I'm grabbing some water for this one, or some milk for this one. Like I'm not like you know like running around the house like trying to you know put it out like actual fire coming out of my mouth here. But
I mean, top 10 is pretty, right? I
oh
mean,
yeah,
that
top 10,
means,
right? Yeah.
yeah.
You gotta have a
What
lot of
if,
right to go for that to happen.
what if I have, what if I have both of them as top five dynasty running backs going into next year? Does that make it less spicy that they would finish in the top 10 for the year 2025?
Would you put
Well,
them
how much are you
top,
just waiting?
would you
Because.
put them top 10 in redraft, Nate? Because I think that's kind of the question here.
I think I would. Yeah, I think I would. I like the take. Like I mean,
I would not put Bothwell top 10 right now.
You could because of
Yeah,
the
because of
Bullock
Bullock, because
situation.
of the
Yeah.
Bullock
Yeah.
situation,
I
right?
I've had a tough time figuring out where I want to rank him in my dynasty for next year. Because of Bullock. Yeah, that does kind of complicate things because they are kind of a 1A, 1B. I've run into the same problem at Western Michigan with Nixon and Buckley. Like Nixon can come back and that kind of complicates things for them. A great system and they can both eat, but will they, you know? So
Yeah. Is it all that
yeah,
great of a
this is
system? Like they've been very efficient running the ball this year, but the volume's not really there for either one of them. They just break off long runs to both of
Yeah, I mean, it's 2 years in a row that
them.
it's looked pretty good. And they got I mean, aren't they coached by a head coach is like a former running back and a running back coach? And
Yeah.
I think
And they run a lot of plays, if I remember correctly. So.
But yeah, I think I like the take. I think it's fairly spicy because I thought whenever I had both these guys up there pretty high that that I was probably being a little spicy with that. Man, Joseph Williams, I think, has two touchdowns for Tulsa today. I think he just scored another one. Sorry, sidetrack there. He's
Good,
having a nice game.
as long as it's not Benjamin.
Yeah, it's
That's
not
who I'm
Benjamin.
facing. That's who I'm facing in the playoffs right now.
Yeah.
I was hoping Anthony Smith would catch a couple tonight, but
Yeah.
hasn't
Dude, Kitten
happened.
Hauser wants to throw every interception under the sun tonight. He's driving me nuts.
He's been real bad. I don't even know how you throw interceptions at Tulsa. But yeah, back to Bothwell and Hardy. I like the take. Moderately spicy. Moderately spicy.
Right. I guess it's my
What?
turn.
Yeah.
All right. Ollie Gordon will return for his final year in college, be drafted highly next year, only for him to lose his job to a younger back.
Well, I was really liking what I was hearing there for the first part of it. Again, another player that I have in Nate's Dynasty League. That would be fantastic. I was right there with you, Jared. I was thinking he was going to come. I was thinking he was going to have to come back like a month ago because it was so bad what was happening with that offense, right? I mean, his production, he was averaging like 2 yards per game basically since the first game. And I was just
Yards
thinking,
per
well,
carry per game.
Sorry, yeah. Well, damn near the same thing. I mean, it was like 21 yards total most games, and I was just thinking, like, okay, there's no way he can go to the NFL. He must come back, but will that actually be a good thing? Sort of the question. That second part sort of threw me for a loop. Is there a specific young player you have
Yeah,
in
I was gonna
mind,
say,
Jared?
is
Nope.
he on roster currently?
Yeah.
Currently on roster, I'm looking at Rodney Fields. It's kind of the guy that I'm like looking at. True freshman this year, right? He beats Gordon in yards per carry right now. He beats Gordon in yards after contact per carry. He beats Gordon in yards per route run in terms of receiving. Now, granted, he hasn't had a ton of receiving, so take that for what you will. And then he also beats Gordon in breakaway percentage right now. Again, these are all things that we kind of like in terms of potential usage in the future, and he's got fresher legs. Gordon is being ground into dust. Nate, you're talking about Darius Taylor. Poor Gordon, man. Like, he's getting worse and worse as things have kind of gone along here. And I really think it's because, man, he got beat the hell up that second year. And I don't think he's truly, really recovered since then. It doesn't help that this offensive line's kind of crap themselves, even though everybody returned from last year. Completely bizarre situation going on there, but
Literally, yeah.
I think Gordon will just run out of steam at one point. They'll have to turn to a guy like Fields next year. So I guess it's me saying endorsing Fields is a pretty solid option in dynasty leagues right now. If you are able to pick up guys right now, I'd go grab him right now.
I guess you kind of touched on it, Jared. Like, I was just gonna ask, like, what do you guys think went wrong with Gordon this year? You think he's just so beat up, like, in the offense? Like, I don't really know what to make of that whole offense, because the offensive line getting so much worse, it throws a complete wrench in sort of my
So
expectation.
my thoughts are, number one, I don't think he's ever been fully healthy since the start of the season. He had a going into fall camp, he had a hamstring or something going on that slowed him down early on. That team's given up. They've given up on Gundy. I think the hottest part of this is you think he's coming back to Oklahoma State. If he returns, I don't think there's any chance in hell he's going to be playing in Stillwater next year. Somebody, if he returns, somebody will give him a pretty nice little bag
They will
to
pay
go
way too
somewhere
much.
else. Yeah. And I don't see any scenario in which he's back in Stillwater. I could see a scenario where, he ends up at Ohio State or
Texas.
Texas. Texas, yeah, that's a good
Can you
example.
imagine?
Something like that. But if he does return and he were to lose that job after all this and Gundy just wearing him out, that would be this might be the hottest take of all, because there's no freaking way he's turning down a bag to the NFL and to other programs only to lose some dude we hadn't heard of until like 3 weeks ago.
Hey, that's
Love it.
the Mike Gundy way, man.
I was
I
just gonna
love
say
it.
that's the most Mike Gundy thing I think I've heard, so it's definitely gonna happen.
Mike Gundy has mastered the ability of doing just well enough to like turn his team on just so that he doesn't get fired. The moment he feels like his job's safe, though, that's when the team craters. And then, like, as soon as people start talking about, like, oh, is Mike Gundy finally gonna get fired? That's when they rip off 10 wins. That's when they go to the Big 12 championship and crap like that.
Mike Gundy's two favorite things to do are to hunt and to hold Oklahoma State hostage by flirting with other programs for contract negotiation and raises. And I don't know how he's going to pull off that second one this offseason with the season that they've had this year. They're a mess. All right, I'll give mine here. So this one is based out over 2 years. So this is a dynasty podcast. Let's throw a real dynasty chip out there. You guys know my love for Damon Williams. I love
Yes.
him. I love him like he's my second child. Liv is the only child I love more than Damon Williams. He will be a top five quarterback both 2025 and 2026. Top five.
So we're taking the Jalen Milroe route here.
What do you mean? Oh, like he's
Okay,
able to back it up 2 years in a row?
Or Bo Nix as well. This assumes that Washington becomes a fantastic team, right? Because that's what it took for both Bo Nix and Jalen Milroe to go back-to-back top five
It
in
assumes
CFF.
Washington's offense becomes good. Doesn't
That's
necessarily
true.
mean Washington, the team, is good.
Yes,
The
but
challenge is that they're in the
again,
Big Ten, right?
yeah,
Washington
that is a
Pac-12 sounds a lot easier to get
yeah,
there.
that was a
This is going to be
yeah.
hard in the Big Ten.
I agree. So that leads to the spiciness of the take. I love Damon Williams. when I redo my rankings, I need to redo my dynasty rankings. They are very out of date right now. I promise I will be better about that next year for folks listening. It kind of got away from me this year. But Damon Williams will probably be a top 10 QB for me at the very least, depending on who kind of comes back and stuff like that.
In dynasty. But would dynasty. You have him as a top 10 for redraft next year?
No. Again, if there's one thing I learned in redraft is that we got to prioritize like some more proven commodities.
Yeah.
Compared to like so many guys that we kind of project and that get up into those first three rounds, man, it can get rough. Meanwhile, guys like Bashaul Tuten, guys like that were falling to like the 10th round. And we knew that they were going to be workhorse backs for their teams. They weren't super sexy systems, right? Anyway, back on track here. Damon Williams. Spicy take. Obviously, anytime you're projecting any quarterback to make the top five here, made even spicier by the fact he's not at a powerhouse program here, made even spicier by the fact that this is the Big Ten where you're going to have lower scoring teams. Yeah. You're not having teams regularly hitting 40 points a game. I'm going to say pretty spicy.
Who's the last Big Ten quarterback that put it together 2 years in a row? Justin Fields, I'm guessing?
He didn't hit top five. I think it was like top 15.
He was pushing top five that his junior or the year before he went, the sophomore year.
Well,
2020 was kind of weird because of COVID, but I mean, at the end, he was.
I don't have fantasy stats that go back that far, so like I can't verify any of this.
But your fantasy stats are post COVID stats.
They are. They started 2021 and they go on from there.
Yeah,
spicy enough.
No, it's spicy enough, definitely. I mean, primarily because he plays in the Big Ten now. And I was just gonna say, have you gone ahead and looked at like who they play in the Big Ten in 25? And
I haven't. No.
Oh, because you don't know like if they're draw
type schedule.
If they have an Indiana type schedule, certainly. I mean, I could see that happening, right? If they get a tough draw,
they're gonna finish with like Iowa, Penn State, Michigan.
All right. I got you guys. Here we go. The Washington's 2025 schedule. We start with Colorado State, UC Davis, Washington State, Maryland, Michigan, UCLA, Illinois, Ohio State, Oregon, and they finish in the playoffs. Or actually, never mind. These dates are to be determined, so we don't actually know when they play these guys. But then they have Purdue, Rutgers, and Wisconsin.
Okay. All right. It's
not too bad. It could have been worse. I mean, they got a couple of bad draws in there.
Iowa, no Penn State.
No Iowa, no Penn State, no Minnesota. Those are teams that would absolutely bog a lot of those games down.
Yeah, definitely. I think I like the high on Damon Williams as well. So to me, I don't think it's too spicy of a take. Obviously, he followed, because I was just going to say, like, is there any risk that maybe he transfers? But like, he followed Jed Fish from Arizona to Washington, right? So we know that as long as Fish is there, which... Well, yeah, admittedly, that actually might not be that long. Like, he could end up leaving, right, as well. But as long as Fish is there.
Florida job safe, apparently.
Wow, other jobs are going to be opening up here. Super safe. Yeah.
wink.
We'll see. Yeah, we'll see. But I like the take. I don't think it's too bad.
All right, Justin, what you got, man? Take number four.
Yeah, my takes are dwindling here. I mean, so this next one... I feel bad because I keep selecting players that are on like my dynasty team. It just sort of worked out that way. But and I mentioned him earlier. So Coleman
worked out that way.
Yeah, it's just a pure coincidence. I don't know. But so Coleman Owen, Ohio wide receiver, I mentioned earlier, he's having a good year. I think this is his first year with the Bobcats. He's actually a junior. He can come back next year. So my take is, man, this isn't really all bad. Okay, so my take is he is going to come back next year, even though he's had a good year in the MAC, and he will be a top five wide receiver in CFF, bolstered mostly from the MAC schedule next year.
A couple things here. One, I really hope the MAC players have learned their lesson about transferring up to Power Four teams. Like I know the bag is nice to chase and
everything.
Learn
the lesson
like
on making their wallets super fat.
I know, but like, and to do little for it as well, which is obviously very nice there. But like, in terms of actual production, like if they want to get to the NFL, like it's just not working out for so many of these guys leaving the MAC, right? Like, like Carson Steele, he's doing well for the Chiefs right now, but he was an undrafted free agent And it just happens, and it took Isaiah Pacheco going down with injury for him to even have
a
shot.
But is it working out well for their NFL hopes if they stay in the MAC?
I mean, at the very least, you can put up some numbers. Numbers catches NFL draft scouts' eyes sometimes.
I mean, there's plenty of MAC guys who are in the NFL, though, right? I don't have, like, a running list.
Well, yeah,
I
mean, like, it's not impossible, right? But, like, what's more likely to get you caught, like, to get the eye of an NFL scout?
Georgia practices. There are, like, 30 scouts there every day. There's, like, a chance there might be one scout show up to your MAC game. I mean, it just
wasn't there a kid from Toledo taking
the bag, man.
Wasn't there a kid from Toledo taken in the first round this year? It might have been a defensive back, but I mean,
Quinyon Mitchell, the cornerback that Alabama tried to steal.
No, and I think there was one who was taken first overall a couple of years ago. Eric Fisher from Michigan.
Oh yeah.
So I mean, if you're good enough, I think it's more so like line of scrimmage players and defensive players seem to do okay. I can't really think of too many of like CFF relevant MAC players that have actually like been valued. Like for Christ's sake, I mean, Jared Patterson, like he's as productive as you can possibly be.
That's true. Yeah.
They looked at him and
said,
"Nah."
Problem was he was 5'5".
Well, yeah, but I mean, so maybe, yeah, maybe if he was like 6 foot, like, I don't know, maybe it would have worked out better for him, but it probably for him regardless, right? If he transferred to a P5 program, it wasn't going to help him. Right. I mean, it wasn't going to make much difference. So I don't know, for some of these MAC players, it feels like it'd be better just be the hometown hero, be the guy on campus. You get a little bit of money maybe from the MAC team. And then a rookie contract in the NFL probably outmatches what you were going to get paid at Louisville or UCF anyways. So
I like it. I like it, man. That's a fun take. I think he's a really good player. The more I watch him, I'm like, he kind of stands out to me on film. So I like that take quite a bit.
Yeah, he'll also get Parker Navarro back next year, which will definitely help him because I don't think Navarro is going anywhere. At the very least, these MAC quarterbacks really got to figure out the fact that like they're not starting at their new locations. Like, look at Colin Schley.
Yeah, no
look
kidding.
at Daquan Finn completely falling apart there at Baylor. Like, guys, the quarterbacks at the very least stay at the MAC. That you're not translating up to the Power Four.
Just Tez Walker. He was the only one.
Well, this is where I agree with you, Nate. That wide receiver can translate probably a little bit better. Like moving up, right? Because you know. It's more about memorizing routes and stuff
unless
like that.
Unless you're Dante Cephas.
God.
Yeah.
But quarterbacks, I think, though, is the hardest one to translate up levels.
Yeah.
And so, like, I think MAC quarterbacks really just need to stay put.
All right. What's your next one, Jared?
My next take here is that this is going to be very particular when I say this, the most intriguing quarterback transfer destination in the country this offseason is going to be Hawaii.
Okay. Why?
What do you mean, why?
Are we assuming
the beaches? Because the beaches are beautiful or what? Because the surfing's fantastic this time of year. Like, why would it be the most intriguing job?
So we all know that Timmy Chang is trying to run the run and shoot offense there, and it's just not happened to the point where we want it to be. And a lot of that has to do with the fact they've been stuck with Braden Shager at quarterback for the last 3 years. Like I'm shocked they didn't let him just walk after he tried to transfer away and everything, and just tried to go grab their own guy out of the portal. Don't know why they brought him back. He's clearly not a guy that's ever going to be able to get the system running like it should be. And the fact that Shager has been able to remain the quarterback tells me that none of the guys behind him are even remotely ready. Like, he's not been good this year, right? He has had an 82.4 NFL passer rating, one of the worst among starters this year, according to PFF. He's got 6.4 yards per attempt. He's got a less than 60% completion percentage, 19-10 touchdown to interception ratio. He's top 5 among starters in turnover worthy plays. If none of those guys behind him could beat him out, they're never really starting for that program. So Hawaii has to be in the realm for a quarterback next year. And so I got some names for you guys.
I have one too.
I have five. I have four names for you guys here.
Okay.
Zevi Eckhouse.
Nope.
Malachi Nelson.
Maybe.
Yeah.
Emmett Brown. And then Justin Martin.
I got one that's even crazier.
Don't say DJ.
DJU.
DJ's done, man. That man.
No,
will
he's
never...
not. He's still got eligibility.
He still
no,
has
I'm,
one
no,
year.
I'm not talking about eligibility. I'm just talking about like he's never
Dude,
like he's persona non grata.
Going to Hawaii. There was a lot of smoke of him going to Hawaii before.
There was
that
a lot
whole...
of jokes of him going to Hawaii. There was
no,
not
no.
any smoke.
his dad runs the island or something like that. I can't remember. His dad's like president or governor of Hawaii or something.
Okay,
like that,
if Uyangale like goes to Hawaii. I will be a very happy man. I'm not even sure exactly how excited I will be because I think he's cooked.
Yeah.
But regardless,
yeah,
like,
I mean, is excitement the right word, Jared? I don't know. I mean, like that would definitely be his last sort of hurrah, right? I mean, his last.
Zebby Eckhouse would be fun.
I think Emmett Brown, I think, would be a good fit sure. over there, and then Malachi Nelson. Like, if you believe in DJU, you better believe in Malachi Nelson being able to run that offense.
Talking about know. The same Malachi Nelson who got yeah. beat out by Maddox Madsen.
Yeah, I don't know what to make of.
Are we talking about
Malachi
the same DJU
Nelson?
that can't get back on the field with
yeah,
Brock Glenn
yeah,
and
both.
Luke Romanuk right now?
Bad,
like,
yeah.
what are we talking about?
Bring him home, Hawaii. Bring him home. Let it finish where it all started.
Hey, maybe Talia Tagovailoa can find that last year of eligibility he's been chasing after.
Oh, wouldn't that be so perfect, like college football? Like he just comes back after 1 year, like
just like by the way. So
do we? Go ahead.
Is it a hot take that is one of the transfer destinations that is going to be the most intriguing this offseason? Because I don't think there's a lot of actual great options in terms of transfer destinations next year.
Are you saying intriguing in that? Because like Brendan Shager's not really that fantasy relevant this year. I mean, he's okay. But I mean,
he's
are you saying like...
I will say his rushing actually has a kind of problem.
Yeah, that's weird. Yeah, he had like 4 rushing touchdowns one game. Are you saying like it's going to be super real or super intriguing because you think whoever they bring in, if one of those names on your list, like those guys could be like a stud, like a
yeah.
big time fantasy stud?
I think there's a potential for a top 12 quarterback if they can actually run the true run and shoot offense over there and have a yeah. quarterback that can actually play quarterback.
Yeah,
yeah I don't think that's crazy at all, given what we've seen that system do historically, right? Like I'm talking way back into like the 2000s. I'm fully on board that like Braden Shager is a terrible like
yeah,
that was my yeah like in week zero I did sort of a recap of those games and it just felt like that offense could have been so good this year with you know with Ashlock and some of the pieces yeah. they had, but Shager just cannot complete passes. But he has actually been okay in CFF. I have to push
he's a
back
QB,
on Nate.
He's currently QB 28 in total points right now.
Yeah, which is actually pretty good. Like in conference,
is,
he averages like 25 points per game against his in conference opponents, which is pretty good.
Now, granted,
that is by the fact that he's got what like 7 or 8 rushing touchdowns or something like that.
Yes,
like that,
it's ridiculous.
We did not expect that, but yeah, your point's well taken. Yeah. Yeah, it's interesting. I probably won't be if you can't make it work in year 3 under Timmy Chang with a third year starting quarterback. I'm probably not going to put a whole lot of hope in some of these other guys. But I totally agree. I do not like Brendan Shager. He's not very good.
Thank God
yeah,
he's done.
It's time to move on. Yeah, yeah. Okay. Do each of us have one more that we could deal like rapid fire here?
Yeah, I can do a rapid fire one.
Okay, you got. I'm gonna let you guys go first because mine's so stupid and it's so unhinged that I have to go last.
All right, Justin, you're up first, man.
Oh man, well, Nate took the words right out of my mouth. I was hoping I wouldn't have to unearth this one because I'll be honest, like I don't know if I really believe it or not, but it's fun anyways.
I feel the same way about mine as well. So like, let it rip,
this is
man.
A safe space. Then all right, my hot take is Rutgers running back. Junior running back Samuel Brown outrushes Kyle Manungai's best season at Rutgers next year.
Oh wow. That's
I mean,
the reason.
I'm
season-ending injury.
Yeah, so the injury is obviously a big concern. The other big concern is I actually went and looked at their schedule 2025 because obviously one of the main selling points of Manungai this year was that nice schedule. But next year I believe they play like Iowa. They do play Penn State. They've got some tougher games on.
Yeah,
them. So. If this happens, you know, this is, like I said, this is a bit of an unhinged kind of take, but it's kind of fun to speculate on. I have to say, when Samuel Brown was playing earlier this year, he looked really good. And he's actually, like, he's like 6'1", 225, but like he's bigger than Manungai. Mm-hmm. Like he feels like a back that can withstand quite a bit of the workload. Again, assuming the staff that's there now stays.
Right.
OC obviously has a good track record. Yeah, I don't know. I'll throw it to you guys.
I think it's super spicy because I don't trust anybody that has a season-ending injury in the middle of the season anymore. So, but I liked what I saw from him. But that yeah, that's super spicy.
He's also.
I know you like the other guy, don't you, Jared, the guy that's been getting some run now that Mnangagwa has been banged up.
Yeah, again, I'll kind of throw on top of it, Nate, that not only did he have the season-ending injury, Samuel Brown's just not been able to stay healthy like at all the last couple of years for Rutgers. So like it's just going to be continual concern there for him. And then yeah, you're right. I like Antoine Raymond. I will say I've been looking at his stats recently, and he's just not had some of the more advanced stats that I want to see. Like I don't think he's
No.
really that great of a running back, but you know, if he gets into
He's
a
a freshman.
system, if he's a freshman, right? But also, again, some of these stats I look at are kind of more predictive stats of like what he could be, and he's just not hitting those metrics either. So I'm a little concerned on that front. But also at the same time, if he's a guy that ends up getting 30 carries a game because that's what Rutgers does under Kirk Soraka, you don't need him to be able to make long breakaway touchdowns on the regular. So I do like Raymond. I think that holds me back from being able to believe in Samuel Brown as well.
Well, this take, I mean, I don't want to revise it too much, but it's more about whoever the next RB1 at Rutgers is next
Right.
year, I guess.
That's fair.
I
That's
gotcha.
fair.
All right, my
What do you got, Jared?
rapid fire last take here. This actually goes against a little bit what I just said on my last one because if this becomes a transfer destination, in my opinion, this becomes more important than Hawaii. But we're gonna pretend like these two separate hot takes are
Okay.
mutually exclusive. From
Okay.
each other.
Different realities here.
Different realities here. Danny O'Neill is not the starter at San Diego State next year.
Is this the same guy that put him like in our tier one when we did our tier rankings for freshmen this year?
Yes, but the problem is he's not gotten better. He's actually getting a little bit worse as the year's going on. And I am starting to
I
get a
told you
little.
when we did that episode, it was like, I don't know. He hasn't looked very good so far. You sure you're ready to put him in your tier one?
And I'm getting a little worried here.
Okay.
Again, little to no rushing, which is actually a very big disappointment because he had some rushing ability coming out of high school. And I was hoping that we would see that kind of flourish a little bit more because, like, we know that Sean Lewis is not afraid to run his QBs, and it's just not been there this year. Granted, he has Marquez Cooper, so I guess anytime he wants to run the ball, he just hands it off to
Yeah.
Cooper. But even
So
still, his yards per attempt has been 6.4 yards per attempt. That's bottom 20 among QBs with 100 plus dropbacks, third worst among quarterbacks with 250 plus dropbacks. So basically, among your starting quarterbacks, he's third worst in the country when it comes to his passing efficiency. I think he hasn't hit 200 yards passing in each of his last three games. I don't think he's hit more than 250 at any point this season,
yeah,
right?
he's
It's
been
just
bad.
not looking like a Sean Lewis quarterback. Now, again, as Nate kind of mentioned with Antoine Raymond, he's a freshman. Like these things are going to get better, but they also lose Marquez Cooper next year. They're going to need a quarterback that is going to be able to kind of kick that offense into a higher gear. And O'Neal has just really not shown that to this point, right? I think Sean Lewis very much regrets taking AJ Duffy. I think he whiffed badly there. I think he was hoping that AJ Duffy would be able to come in for a year. O'Neal would be his guy after that. Potentially. And with Duffy completely falling apart there, he's potentially having to start a freshman quarterback here that he just wasn't ready for. I think he takes another shot at the quarterback position in the portal this offseason. At least to grab a guy that'll push O'Neal.
I think they bring in a transfer. Does that guy win? I don't know. I don't think it's that hot take to say that a freshman quarterback that hasn't been very good this year won't start next year. But I do think he'll have the leg up on the job. But yeah,
Like, there's a reason why
interesting.
I say this
I
one
wouldn't
for
abandon
last.
him yet. I wouldn't abandon him yet,
No,
but
I'm not saying abandon him. I'm just
yeah.
saying like it's a possibility you have to consider, right?
I'm not a Danny O'Neill fan, so
No, neither am I. And I would say, and you hit the nail on the head, Jared, the problem with him is he's not a runner. At least it doesn't appear to be. And this is now 2 years in a row where Sean Lewis has had to deal with sort of an immobile quarterback. And I think he kind of regrets being in these positions. Like, I think he's probably
but the crazy like O'Neal can run. That's the thing. It's like why are they not letting him run?
Sometimes high school stats just don't translate. You just
No, I
never
mean, yeah, I
know.
agree, right? But like still, like it doesn't feel like they're even trying.
Yeah, he's bad.
Yeah.
All right, my last one, rapid fire here. the man that I've talked about a couple times here. He's on my Christmas list to get either that headband or the t-shirt. John Mateer.
Don't do my man dirty here, Nate.
Oh, I'm not doing him dirty.
Okay, thank
I'm
God.
taking I'm taking him up a notch. What's the only way John Mateer can get better than what he is right now? He's the starting quarterback for the University of Oklahoma next year.
Okay,
Because
so
he follow there's more. Because he follows his offensive coordinator, Ben Arbuckle, over to Norman.
SEC
And
defenses versus
I was
Mountain
about to say
West.
this is a problem here. This is not get him better actually, because yes, he might be playing with better
That'd be
receivers,
horrendous.
but those defenses are going to be a problem. And I'm not sure that Arbuckle offense translates all the way up to the SEC, at least in year one.
I'm sorry, but the coolest dude in college football with the best offensive coordinator playing for the coolest team in college football is an improvement in my mind all
Debatable.
around. It's just super cool, guys.
I will say, Nate, I did almost have a hot take, a couple of almost hot takes here today, where I said that neither Jackson Arnold nor Michael Hawkins would be Sooners next year.
Yeah, no, that's because John Mateer is going to beat him out. Have you guys actually watched much of John Mateer? I know he plays
I've
late.
watched a
You
ton. I
guys are more
love him
used
to
to it.
death, dude. He's so fun.
Somebody mentioned he's Baker Mayfield 2.0, and I cannot unsee it. Like, he's the type of guy that will sacrifice his life to win a game, and his teammates would kill themselves to help him do that. Like, it's just incredible, like how he just kind of wills his way there. I'm like, this is Baker Mayfield. He's perfect. He's in Norman. Let's do it. Let's hire Ben Arbuckle.
Well,
Let's
look,
go.
Baker Mayfield works well in that Powder Puff Conference, the Big 12, right? But as soon as you go into the SEC, NFL Junior,
Hey, we're
that type of
all
behavior,
SEC here now. This is a full SEC
I know. It saves space, but
podcast.
that type of behavior, although is great for CFF,
It
likely
looks
leads to
okay
a
for
season
Tampa Bay
ending.
Buccaneers too, though.
Yeah, well, but it likely leads to a season-ending injury in week five, right? I don't know, if you really want that reckless style of play in the big boy league. So I don't know. I don't see how that would be an upgrade for his CFF stock, though, either, Nate. He already has that system in a weaker conference.
That's where I can't get behind this, that this would be better for him from a CFF perspective. NFL
It's
draft
better for
prospect.
him because he's a Sooner, guys. I can't explain
Nate,
this
this is the same.
anymore.
This
Well, he
this
can
is
go five
me,
and seven, I
Nate.
guess.
This is me. This is like me saying that Denzel Boston's going to transfer to Georgia, and therefore he's going to
That'd
be
be
an
sick.
absolute stud.
Oh, that's a good equivalent. Damn you. Damn you. I almost said that Haynes King is going to be the next starting quarterback for Georgia because he follows his offensive coordinator, Buster Faulkner, after Bobo gets fired. That was going to be my other one.
I think that would be a very popular move, actually, amongst a
I
lot of the
believe I
Georgia
don't
fan
I don't
base.
I don't know if people would, now, dude, can you imagine Gunnar Stockton with Buster Faulkner? That would actually be kind of fun.
That could get very interesting, yeah. Or it could go really bad,
Or
just
horrifically bad, who knows?
All right, we gotta wrap it up. We've been at this thing at least an hour and a half now.
We are
Let's
at an hour 32.
Awesome. I'm glad we were able to squeeze all those in. That was fun. Okay, so what else you guys have going on? Let's just real quick, anything you guys working on? I know everybody needs to check out Jared's dynasty rankings, his rest of the season
Don't check
rankings.
those out right now. Don't check those out right
Oh,
now.
okay.
Those need some extensive work on them. They will
So
be
stay tuned.
good when we return in January after we take our break and everything.
Yeah, fire them up.
I'll have some initial dynasty rankings for you guys then. But for
Okay.
right now, unfortunately, I just was
What
not
about the
able to
rest of the
keep.
season rankings? Are those up to date?
Rest of season's rankings are up to date. That is something
Nice.
we have added to campusagant.com. Currently, you can see our rest of season rankings. We're working on expanding them to where you can actually see what my projected values are for them over the next couple of weeks, both in terms of total points over the next 3 weeks as well as fantasy points for a game. So you'd be able to break it down that way. So go and check that out. Currently, you can just sort them by the just the raw ranking of them. Like I said, we're working on expanding it from there.
Nice.
Awesome.
In terms of other work, Justin, ladies first, man.
VP
Oh.
Substack on
Well,
VP, man.
I was going to say third analyst first and give it to Nate.
Nobody
Yeah, well,
reads
look.
my stuff anyways. You go ahead.
No, I think everybody's reading your Pulse of the Nation. I'm still waiting this week. We're Thursday night now, Nate. I don't know what's
I
happening
know.
here, but
I know. It's gonna be a late night here.
well, there's nothing wrong with that, I suppose. But look, yeah, I think most of the people listening here probably already know me. I publish every week various CFF articles. You can find me on Twitter, well, at Volume Pigs, and then the link is in my profile. Everything you need to know is there.
Awesome. Awesome, man. Well, thank you for joining us. It's been a lot of fun, chopping it up here, doing some hot takes. You mentioned how we can find you on Twitter at Volume Pigs. Jared's at CFF underscore Jared. I'm at CFF Nate. You can also find me on Blue Sky. I just joined a few days ago, so I'm at CFF Nate over there at Blue Sky. Be sure to check that out. I'm gonna have my top five dynasty rankings for 2025 posted on there here within the next week or so. Just top five per position, so nothing too crazy, but just a little something to chew on over
Nice.
there.
Is
So
there a
thank.
reason people are joining Blue Sky all of a sudden? I see this happening quite a bit right now, but I
No, I
feel
don't
like
want.
I.
Probably not for topics of this show.
Well,
yeah,
Okay.
there are less bots over there, I'll say that. It
That's
is
true.
it's a very
Yeah.
positive vibe atmosphere over there, and everybody seems to be getting along pretty well. So it's a lot of fun, man. So check it out. Check it out.
Might have to, yeah.
Yeah. Thanks everybody for listening. Good luck to everyone in their playoffs. Have a wonderful Thanksgiving. And Jared and I will be back next month in December. Cheers, everybody.